greetings. This is we're about to embark into a wonderful conversation about your history with Cesar Chavez, and I just wanted to get a sense from you, Richard, as to, you know, what was your initial contact with Cesar, and how did your friendship and your relationship develop?
I think that you know, when I go back in time and try to understand it myself, it was an evolution before I met him, because I remember being whatever disinterest I showed was really fearful of such political activities, and so I didn't want to know anything about him at one time. And you know, I'd heard things, and I could relate it to my own background because my grandfather had been he'd fought in the Mexican Revolution with Pancho Villa, and then he became a union guy in San Diego, organized farm worker unions in the 30s in San Diego and Orange County. So I always had that little thing sort of nagging at me that there was a relationship there to be had or to be understood. And it wasn't until I was in college and a couple of black guys I played basketball with who were in the Black Student Union, they were leaders of the black student group there, they kept asking me what I knew about Cesar Chavez and his movement, and I would tell them nothing and I don't care. Then that evolved, and I had to start looking and wondering, and my younger brother got involved with the Great Boycott, and I saw an event at the school. They had these convocations every so often at Chapman College, where I was a student, and I went to one, and Chris Hartmeyer was speaking there, and I remember a couple of my, you know, I wanted to go get a flyer from him afterwards to read a little more and understand a little more. And one of my friends said, "Oh, no, you don't want to go learn more about that. We get credit for coming, but you don't want to go learn more about that." And I said, "Yeah, I do." So it evolved. I'd see this guy to remind me of things that I'd read about him, usually private, very privately, because, again, like so many people of my era and our generation and our family backgrounds, there was a lot of fear involved for good reason over time. So I went to see him with a food caravan in January of 1970, and that's the first time I'd ever seen him, and I went in search of something that was on my own mind, who I was going to go see and what I was going to go see and what I was looking for, what I was looking to critique even before I met him, wondering, could this guy be somebody I'd be interested in or I'd like to know more about? And so I went, and the first time I saw him, it just happened to be in exactly the same spot I last saw his body so many years later in the office there in Delano. And so when I saw him, I knew he was the guy I came to see. So it was a real immediate presence. I happened to take a picture of my brother with Cesar behind him at that time. But yeah, he was who I came to see. And so for a long time, for that first, those first months in the summer, my brother went and volunteered in Coachella and then to Bakersfield and Delano for the union. And I was an organizer and then a writer in their newspaper, then the editor of their newspaper. But for the longest time, I was very much in awe of him. And I think my brother used to speak for us because I couldn't speak to him. So over time, then within a year, some things happened, and I'll move it along a little quicker here, pace-wise. But within a year, separately, I started dating his daughter. In a funny aside, and we can get to that if you want later, but in a funny aside, for the wrong reasons, and many years later when I confronted him with it again, he cried about it, one of the few times I ever see him cry. But he fired me unfairly, and while I was dating his daughter, and his family was all angry at him, he didn't know why, he didn't know I was dating his daughter. So it evolved, and I remember the first time I was bold enough to talk to him. My wife still laughs about it once in a while. She says, "How did you walk in, ask my father if you could marry me?" Because it was hard for you to even address him at that time. And I just didn't know. I just walked in, and he was laying down in the bed in the Delano house, the little house there. And he was laid out, and I went in and asked him. I said, "Hey, Richard. Hi, Cesar. How you doing?" He says, "Hey, what do you need, or what can I do?" And I said, "Well, I just want to know, do you think this ring would fit Anna?" And he said, "Yeah, I think it would." I said, "Well, I want to give it to her, and I wanted to come talk to you about it." And so that was my first bold foray into direct communication with him. And then because I had been accustomed to interviewing him for the newspaper, and I somewhere in a book, some book I once saw, back those days in movement things, you never got your name for attribution. So I had this great interview with him the morning he got out of jail in Salinas, where he spent 35 days or 25 days, whatever it was, Leroy, or whatever it was at that time. And I had this great interview with him about what had happened, how it had gone, and, you know, how was it when Coretta, Scott King came to visit you, and Ethel Kennedy, and all these things. And I saw it in a book later, but I did learn to interview him, and I used to interview him all the time for a while, even after we got married in October of 71. We got married, and we were living in San Diego because, remember, he had fired me, you know, earlier that year. And I had a nice job in San Diego with a nonprofit, and we got married, moved to San Diego, and our first Thanksgiving back up in La Paz to spend with him, he used to do this thing to me and everybody else that he got to work for him for $5 a week, and he started working me, and I didn't know it, but he was, and you were excited because he was giving you the attention. Well, by the time Christmas came around, and I had a very nice job at that time. When I got married, I was making, back in, you know, fall of 71, I mean, it was fall of 71, I was making $905 a month, and that was good money then. And by Christmas time, we spent the week with him, and he says, you know, why don't you think about coming to work here? And I wanted to tell him, yeah, after you fired me last year, why should I? But I was thrilled that he was asking me. And then when I said, well, what would you want me to do? He said, I'd like you to work with me. And so I think he had been feeling me out and sizing me up for potential or whatever else over time. And so in February of 72, Anna and I were back by about February 7th. We were back living in La Paz, working with him. And so the relationship began to form more. And I'll end in a second here on this, but just to say that we moved into his two-bedroom house. And he was so into the vow of poverty and what would you say, the word, it's much more than frugal, that my wife and I, my wife of 4 or 5 months and I, moved into the second bedroom with her two sisters and two brothers. So we were all in the same bedroom in that little house.
Now, Richard, I want to step back a little bit here, in that you said when you first met him, he was the person, you know, that you were looking for, the person you, the real thing. I mean, what was it? What did you encounter when you saw him and you met him? I mean, he obviously left you speechless, but what was it?
The closest thing I could describe was maybe within the previous year, as the world was changing in 68, 69, and you know, all of our outlooks on the world and government and trust and honesty and the world was changing. I had read the book Siddhartha, and I remember it was the closest thing to depicting that situation to me, and I said, you know, this is something I could do, get into. The farm worker movement, not only because of my grandfather, but because of its activities, as I was looking at all the menu of things you could get involved with in school in those days, was the one that made the most practical sense to me. So I followed that one, and that's what he reminded me of when I first saw him.
But was there something about his character? I mean, Caesar, you know, when you encounter him, did he bowl you over with his personality, or what was it about his charisma or whatever you might attribute it to? What was it that struck you on first meeting him?
The best I could describe that, best way I could describe that, is that it was the power of his peacefulness. He was just very. There was a very quiet power about him, and if I could ever see auras, there was a great aura around him as well. And I think the funny thing to me is that even when I learned over the years to discuss, debate, argue, strongly argue with him about things over time and discuss a lot of issues over the years, I never lost that kind of respect feeling for who he was outside of our relationship. Because the same way I saw him the first time is the same way I saw him the last time.
Okay. Now, you went to work for him for the second time after you'd been initially fired. What was it like to work with him day by day, and you had a number of different roles. Maybe you could talk about your day-to-day interaction with him and what it is that you did with Caesar. I mean, you were with him every day.
Well, it began as part of, you know, the long line of people who worked doing his personal security. And so that's where it began. And then it began and it evolved much farther than that. But after several months, and that included the Arizona fast, so that was a pretty intense time. But after several months at the, I guess, the ripe old age of 24 or so, I was put in charge of his security and traveled. That began our about 3.5 years of constant travel together, constant living together, around the clock. You know, I think I'd take off about 5 or 7 days a year. He'd never take off any. So we were together 15 to 20 hours a day, sometimes more, every day of most of those years, and traveled the country and parts of the world. So as our relationship evolved, I got so familiar with him that we bonded extremely well, much more than father-in-law and son-in-law. We were best pals, even though our age disparity. But we became very good friends, and I realized in part that part of my role was to not only get him to places, take care of all the logistics around it, make sure that, you know, the path was clear for him to be him, so he didn't have to worry about where he's at, where he's going, who he's talking to, what he's going to eat, where we're going to stay. All of those details around him, it became part of my role to pave them, including at times, because he'd get, you know, I'd know when he was tired. I'd know when he was on, when he was off. I'd write his 3x5 cards for his speeches because I knew the outline. I'd talk to him about, you know, when he was tired, how he delivered lines in certain places. And I really watched to see how audiences responded to him, to know and feel and sense it. And that's why I think I'm one of the people who may have heard him speak to more people and more audiences and more places directly and personally than anyone else. During his heyday, especially, which I called that period of the early 70s to the mid 70s, but during that time, I came to recognize his power as a speaker. I've seen some books that sort of allude to it, but other people say he was not a very good speaker. He wasn't an orator of the magnitude of Jesse Jackson or people who, you know, Baptist minister. On the other hand, I've not seen many of them get people to go make speeches in universities or labor halls or temples or various church group meetings and walk away with people leaving their lives and their jobs to come work with you for $5 a week. And I saw him do that many times.
But how was that possible?
His message, I think what I've learned from other people over the years is that his vision and his message were very simple, very clear, very direct, and people like that and can understand it. And the other power that he had was a power to lift fear from you, whether it was a fear of a paycheck, the fear of standing up for yourself, the fear of standing out in a crowd, the fear of defending yourself. He really lifted a lot of fear from people, and he was really adept at lifting the fear of getting when you miss your first paycheck, because everybody was afraid to do that. And yet he'd get people who were doing well in their lives, to come, whether they're professionals, nurses, technical people, computer operators. I mean, the guy that founded, one of the founders of Smith & Hawkins, Dave Smith, was a computer programmer for us there in La Paz for $5 a week. So he did that with a lot of people, and I'd see professionals, doctors, lawyers walk away from their comfortable lives to come follow him, to work with him for $5 a week, and you had to be pretty good to get people to do that.
So let's get back to you a little bit now. What was it? I mean, how did he win you over? Because that sounds like it was a rather complicated relationship, being the son-in-law and pressures and expectations. How is it that you were able to evolve, basically leave your job, leave a certain lifestyle, and come to